is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok was actually unfortunate to find himself in a political setup that is alien to him and really made it very impossible for him to perform his duties as a prime minister.
That's Mubarak al-Fadil, leader of Sudan's reform wing of the Umma Party, on the prime minister's decision to resign. Details coming up. Also, Kenyan police are pursuing suspected Al-Shabaab terrorists in one of its border towns with Somalia. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Sudan has plunged deeper into uncertainty, with Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok resigning yesterday after being unable to forge a consensus on how to advance the country's transition to democracy. Hamdok, an economist and former United Nations official, was widely respected by the international community. He said in a live, nationally televised address that he tried his best to stop Sudan from sliding towards disaster and that the country is in a dangerous crossroad which threatens its very survival. Hamdok served as prime minister under a military-civilian power-sharing deal that followed the overthrow of former leader Omar al-Bashir. But the military dissolved Hamdok's government in a coup on October 25th. He then returned a month later under a deal with the military, tasked with forming a government of technocrats ahead of elections in 2023. Some Sudanese political parties have praised Hamdok's decision to resign and called it a clear indication that the civilian-military partnership will not help transition to civilian democratic rule. Mubarak al-Fadil, leader of the reform wing of the Umma Party, told South Sudan in Focus that it was an unwinnable situation.
Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok was actually unfortunate to find himself in a political setup that is alien to him and really made it very impossible for him to perform his duties as a prime minister.
Al-Fadil said Hamdok has some success but was not politically strong enough to survive in Sudan's transitional situation after 3 decades of authoritarian rule under former president Omar al-Bashir.
He was a victim of such a turbulent and a chaotic period. But at the end, he has actually established a precedent of resignation of high officials, which has not been there in the history of Sudanese politics.
Mass protests have continued in the capital Khartoum and other towns since the military takeover. The Central Committee for Sudanese Doctors reports that more than 50 protesters have been killed and more than 500 wounded. South African civil rights leader and anti-apartheid fighter Archbishop Desmond Tutu has been laid to rest at the St. George's Anglican Cathedral in Cape Town. Tutu, one of the world's most celebrated Mora leaders, lost his battle against cancer the day after Christmas at the age of 90. At his funeral on Saturday, dignitaries from across the globe paid tribute to the man many called the Laughing Priest. Darren Taylor reports.
Dumela, I am standing here representing those who called the one we come to lay to rest, Daddy, Kulu, Malume, Boot Boy, and the one whom he affectionately called Hoho.
Naomi said the family had received thousands of messages saying thank you for sharing Desmond with the world.
Daddy would say, the love the world has shown has warmed the cockles of our hearts. And he then would say, I don't know what a cockle is, But whatever it is, it has been warmed. And since he was an English teacher, and if he didn't know what a cockle is, I definitely don't know what a cockle is. But our cockles are warm.
Naomi said the family had received thousands of messages saying thank you for sharing Desmond with the world.
Well, it actually is a two-way street. Because we shared him with the world, you shared part of the love you held for him with us. And so we are thankful.
Gazing at the simple pine coffin behind her, Naomi said a few traditional goodbyes to her father.
Lala chez, tenza, saliwa, jalamba.
President Cyril Ramaphosa said God had anointed Archbishop Tutu a champion of the immortal cause of justice.
He was not content to decry apartheid at conferences or benefit concerts or international forums. He was there with the freedom fighters confronting the apartheid regime. He was not content to preach about social justice from the pulpit. He was with the homeless, the helpless, the persecuted, the sick and the destitute, in the streets, in the shelters, and in homes.
In recent years, Tutu also confronted Ramaphosa's ruling African National Congress. The Arch, as he was known, slammed the ANC for being corrupt and selfish, even describing it as worse than the apartheid government for neglecting the poor.
Even after the advent of democracy, he did not hesitate to draw attention, often harshly, to our shortcomings as leaders of the democratic state.
The president remembered it was Tutu who first called South Africa the Rainbow Nation, in his hope that its many ethnic groups would be united.
It was with this term, Rainbow Nation, that he bequeathed our new nation the greatest gift of all, hope and forgiveness. There are times when he felt let down, and yet he never lost hope. We thank him for giving us hope, for reminding us of our responsibility as a people, but more especially also as leaders, and for giving us a reason to believe that we are and that we can be a true rainbow nation that he spoke about.
Tutu's body has been cremated and his ashes interred permanently at the cathedral. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
There are still more questions than answers after fire gutted the South African Parliament building in Cape Town yesterday morning. A 49-year-old man is in police custody in connection with the incident. However, as Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, puzzling discoveries have left authorities calling for thorough investigations.
Packed halls covered with black smoke, gutted roof, shattered windows are among the only things left from the once magnificent South African Parliament building in Cape Town. Amos Masondo, chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, told reporters the damage was extensive.
We are pained by the damage to the old Assembly Chamber and the National Assembly Chamber and all the critical offices of Parliament, which is a national key point and the legislative seat of our country, whose value is beyond any measure.
Firefighters who were at the scene 6 minutes after the blaze was discovered found that the valve which automatically triggers the sprinkler system in case of fire was switched off. The fire alarm only went off close to 30 minutes after the fire started. Electricity did not trip as expected where there is fire. A trespasser accessed the Parliament building by jumping over the fence. It seems there were no security personnel to stop him. The 49-year-old man, who had to be rescued from the building after it caught fire, has been arrested and charged with break-in, theft and arson. Public Works Minister Patricia Delil said investigations are underway to ascertain how the men got access into a building guarded by the police.
The problem came in that there was no monitoring of the CCTV cameras on that fateful night.
National Assembly Speaker Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula said she won't take responsibility for what seems to be a lapse in keeping the landmark safe. She said the work of Parliament will continue.
I'm not responsible for any dropping of the ball in terms of security in Parliament. If you want to attach that to me, sorry.
Engineers are assessing the cost of damage, which is estimated to run into millions of dollars. President Cyril Ramaphosa has urged investigators to dig deeper into the incident. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Kenyan authorities say they are pursuing suspected Al-Shabaab terrorists who killed six people early today in Lamu County on the border with Somalia. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's Lamu County Commissioner Irungu Masharia says suspected Al-Shabaab militants attacked and killed villagers early Monday in the county's Widu area. However, there was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack. Masharia says they are pursuing the suspects into the forest. He says they might also be hiding among the population. Masharia says they are seeking the public's help to trace the criminals. Kenya's Citizen TV reported at least one victim was shot, one hacked to death with a machete, and others were burned alive. VOA could not independently verify the accounts. Widu area residents say the attackers also torched several houses, though some residents speaking to local media questioned if the violence was the work of the Islamist militants or related to local politics. The Nation Media Group quoted some locals saying most of the attackers were carrying machetes, whereas Al-Shabaab militants are commonly armed with guns. Masharia says they have deployed more security forces to the area.
But we have beefed up security in the county.
He says they have beefed up security in the county and to make sure that Kenyans and their properties are safe. Al-Shabaab are known to hide out in the Boni Forest in northeast Kenya's Lamu County on the border with Somalia. The Somali terrorist group launches sporadic attacks on villages and public transport. On Saturday, a man riding a motorcycle was killed when he ran over a roadside bomb in the Kiungu area of Lamu, on the border with Somalia, near the Indian Ocean coast. Kenyan security officials blamed Al-Shabaab for setting off the explosives. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Paleoanthropologist Richard Leakey, known for his fossil discoveries and conservation work in his native Kenya, has died at age 77. The cause of death was not announced. According to the Associated Press, Leakey was the son of world-renowned paleontologists Louise and Mary Leakey, whose works helped demonstrate that human evolution began in Africa. Richard Leakey also held a number of public service leadership roles in Kenya, including director of the National Museum of Kenya. He also spearheaded campaigns against the ivory trade to save the dwindling African elephant population. Former rebels in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo staged a major protest over the weekend, saying they have received no food or drinking water in the demobilization camp for nearly 2 weeks. VOA's Kate Bond-Dawson spoke with reporter Jafar Al-Katanti in Goma about the protest. He says the protesters blocked the road from the village of Bubambiro, where the camp is located, to the city of Goma and other areas.
They were protesting yesterday against the government, a bad treatment they received from the government. One of them told me I left my army group because the government told us we will be protected and we will be trained to become soldiers. But now this is 1 year, I receive any good treatment and we don't know about our future. And that is because they made 10 days without food, without water, and they cannot survive like that. they started to rob people in the surrounding village, and yesterday they decided to protest to block the road, the national road, linking Goma to Bukavu and other villages. And it was a bad day because they burned the road and asking for money for all vehicles to pass.
Now, I understand that at least one person was killed during the protest. What happened?
Yes, because police had to control the situation. And when they came, they start shooting guns, and the farmer militia also using stones. And one of, we don't know if it was a military, because also soldiers came to support militia, and maybe one of them shot a real ball and someone dead.
Now, is the government or are any aid agencies doing something to help the rebels?
No, only the government is feeding them, but not at all time. They can get some food for 1 month, and when the food is end, they need to wait maybe 2 weeks or more for the second and for another food. That's the problem. And that's what the governor of North Kivu said, that the state of siege is doing its best to make end of the rebel groups, but it's for the national government to support the North Kivu province, the North Kivu government, because the province itself could not succeed to feed them and to take care of those who are surrounding.
That was journalist Jafar Al-Khatanti in Goma in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with my colleague Kate Pondawson. Health authorities in southeastern Nigeria are worried that despite the surge in new cases of coronavirus Omicron variant, residents are refusing to wear masks and are not social distancing. Officials fear an explosion of new cases as the Christmas and New Year holidays end. For more, VOA's Chinedu Ofo reached reporter Munachi Chooks at Oweri in Imo State.
Yeah, I've been able to move around. I actually visited some shopping malls, event centers, parks, and the recreation parks. And I saw a lot of people there without their masks on, and very few. You can count the number of people that were wearing their masks, and they were seen as outcasts, like people make jests of them. Why are you wearing masks? They can ask you that, yes, because there's nothing like COVID. Most Nigerians still don't believe that there's COVID, that COVID exists. So that's what I saw in the shopping malls and the event centers that I was able to visit.
And what about health facilities, the government health centers? What is the situation there?
It's still a celebration period. The Christmas period is over, and this is the New Year season. So most of them, most of the government clinics or hospitals are closed. I think they are on break, so to say. So few people are there. Few people are there, mostly people that have been on admission. And I didn't see any center, actually, where they call vaccination centers. Those centers, vaccination centers, are closed as well because of the Christmas and New Year break or holiday season.
So what are the authorities saying? Because there are fears that there will be an explosion of new Omicron or coronavirus cases as the New Year rolls in.
Yeah, there's this surge of COVID-19 in Nigeria, as we know, and Nigeria entered the fourth wave of the pandemic. And it's actually ravaging the country. And the government, they will tell you that they've made provisions of people to get vaccinated. But one thing I notice here, my observation is this. I listen to radio stations, TV stations I watched. There wasn't any adverts or hype or jingles on where you can get vaccinated, the vaccination centers. Which a few people that I interviewed told me that they don't even know where to get their jabs. So there's not much awareness out there in this part of Nigeria, the eastern part. That's what I found out.
A few months ago, the Nigerian government destroyed more than 1 million doses of the COVID vaccine. And from what you just told us, there are those who have not received the vaccine or those who don't know where to get the vaccine. Any explanation as to why vaccines have been destroyed when there are people who don't have even their first shot?
Yes. The authorities I interviewed earlier in Abuja, they told me that those vaccines were expired, and that's the reason they gave and reason they destroyed them. So most Nigerians are now saying that. That means all the vaccines that people have been taking, you know, were expired vaccines. So, and that gives others room not to take the vaccine, to, you know, to give excuses that the vaccines that are being given to Nigerians were expired vaccines. But the government have come out to, you know, say that that's not true. They found out that those vaccines that they destroyed were expired. That was the reason they destroyed them, so not to give it to Nigerians. But like I said earlier on, I think there should be more awareness, especially in this part of the country. People rarely wear their masks. People rarely observe the COVID-19 protocols, things like maintaining social distancing in crowded places. There are lots of parties still ongoing at this period, and you see lots of people in these crowded places without their masks on or showing evidence that they've been vaccinated before entering into this gathering.
That was reporter Munachi Chuks in Nigeria's Owerri, Imo State, speaking with VOA's Chinedu Afor. Officials in Botswana on Monday announced President Mokgweetsi Masisi is isolating after testing positive for the coronavirus. Mokondisi Dube reports from the capital, Habrode.
Botswana government spokesperson John Tipowe says President Masisi, who is isolating at his official residence, received the result after routine testing.
Members of the public are assured that His Excellency the President does not have any symptoms and will continue to receive close medical monitoring by his medical doctors. The self-isolation is a precautionary measure in accordance with Botswana's COVID-19 health protocols.
This is the first time President Masisi has tested positive, although he has on several occasions gone into self-isolation as a precaution. In Masisi's absence, Vice President Slamba Tsokwane will act as the president. Botswana, which along with South Africa, was the first country to report detecting the new Omicron variant of the coronavirus in November, has seen a sharp increase in COVID-19 cases in recent weeks. Officials, however, say hospitalizations and deaths have remained low. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Haboroni.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokwilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.